The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we have to start the show today with St Mullins. Beat Rathdowney early yesterday in an absolutely cracking game. Kind of game burst into life with two goals in the first half and never really let up properly then after that. But it was the finish really. Rathdowney Earl obviously went a point ahead. The game looked like it was going to be theirs even though St Mullins dominated the second half, I thought. And then James Doyle stepped up. Usually you hold this for performance of the weekend, but like that, I mean, it was just incredible. His performance in general in the second half, but the 2 points at the end, my God. So it's kind of nice when a lesser known player hits the highlights on TG Cahir. This is what club's all about, yeah. Conan. And then you have, like, you've Rory Jacob tweeting, has there ever been as good a second half performance in club championship than James Doyle from St Mullins? You've Colin Ryan saying, first time seeing James Doyle hurling, he's a fair operator, that score at the end. You've Joe Dooley saying, that was some second half display from James Doyle of St Mullins. He was literally everywhere. You had Anthony Daly giving him, you know, the shout out. It was the same James Doyle that got the late goal against Coola when the game was slipping away from St Mullins. So there you are, James Doyle. Take a bow.
It was Hollywood stuff, really, wasn't it? Like that last score. That's the sort of thing if you saw in a movie or a TV show now, you'd be like rolling your eyes, going, this stuff doesn't
happen. It's Roy of the Rover stuff. Yeah. Coming on the back of that was more spectacular, the last one. The one before that, the catch and the score was just incredible. So one of them is Roy of the Rover stuff. But to put two together once a week in a minute. But he looked in the second half the way he was catching the ball. It looked like an under 21 against under 16s. He looked like he was just on a different level, physically, in the air, on the ground, any way you want.
I was thinking that it was like almost like he had entered the Matrix where he just conquered space and time and, you know, he was on a different plane to everybody else. Yeah. Like they were going to slow motion. He could do whatever he wanted in this new universe that he created for himself. It was like, I can't believe that he wasn't out the whole time then or in the middle the way he was dominating.
Well, that was the thing. That was the move that changed the match for St Mullins, was to be bringing him out, because it wasn't a game for full forward lines. And big mistake I thought Rathdowney Earl made was not bringing Ross King out until it looked to me like the last 5 minutes he got a point. He was being starved in there, like, and he's their main threat along with Mark Cavanagh, who was running amok out around the broken play in the half forward line, and Ross could have done the same thing. So like St Mullins tactically made a good change and it won the game for them, and Rathdowney Earl were far too slow to make that same change. That looks to me, you know, how the game kind of went. I think St Mullins handled Paddy Purcell brilliantly. He was well marshalled. He scored obviously an unbelievable goal, but in general, he was well held, and he had that bad miss at the end. But I think the Ross King one is the one, really, you know, that Rathdowney Earl will look back on that with, you know, regrets. Can't leave your best forward getting maybe 4 or 5 touches of the ball, and then out of desperation he tried to go for a goal that just wasn't on because he wasn't getting any ball, you know.
And like you've always been banging on about winter club season, you know, and like November hurling, like it's not the time to be inside winning clean ball, like, or expecting lovely ball come in, like, under no pressure
with a bounce in front of you.
You probably
need
your best players out there just getting their hands on it and then seeing what they can do from there, because there's only 60 minutes as well, there's 10 less minutes. You need them in the game as much as possible.
Without putting a dampener on this now, and this wasn't me that noticed this because I'm not a hurling person, but Dermot Gizzy Ling pointed out on Twitter that James Doyle's winning score, he fouled the ball. Now, you won't know how he fouled the ball, but you can't catch the ball twice. So he put it on, when he caught the puck out, he caught the ball, put it on his hurl, threw it back in his hand, continued on. Now he's been faced by about 4 different defenders. So he puts it onto the hurl and he's carrying it along the hurl, and then he throws it up over one of the defenders. Unbelievable skill. But that ball didn't hit the ground and pop back up. That came straight back into his hand. You can't catch the ball twice.
Right.
Now, in fairness to the referee, it was a very difficult one because he put it into his hand the first time so quick, not long after catching it. And then it was obviously that beautiful bit of skill of throwing it over. I can understand how the referee missed it, but to me it looked like a technical foul and it should have been a draw. Sorry, James.
I'd say the ref was mesmerised just watching it as well. Yeah. And probably forgot. Like, Yeah, like that's the rules, and that's obviously like it's a harsh one, but it's almost like the equivalent of football when you take 12 steps, but you look purposeful when you're doing it.
He looked purposeful. Yeah. He absolutely looked purposeful. What he was doing. Yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing. He got away with it, and that's look. Listen, to be honest, I think on their second half performance, they dominated the puckouts. I think St Mullins just slightly shaded it. I thought Rathdowney were the better team in the first half. Marty Kavanagh was interviewed afterwards. He was brilliant as well. As he always is, he says, we got on a roll after the Carlow semi-final. We were dead and buried in the semi, and the last puck of the ball got us back into it. From there on, we gathered momentum. Look, we are where we are now is just the stuff of dreams. That's interesting. Now, there's only four teams in Carlow, so that was the first round, the semi-final. Jeez. And they were beaten in it. And then going into the final, they were rank outsiders against Mount Leinster Rangers and then won that. And then they're outsiders against Coola for obvious reasons. And then they win that. And then they go in as outsiders again against Rathdowney Earl. We thought it should have been 50-50, but they were outsiders and they win that. And now they're going in as rank outsiders. But I wouldn't bet, I wouldn't be, you know, sometimes as my father says, your name can be written on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Written in the stars.
Like written in the stars. It's the only second time a Carlow team has ever made the final. Mount Leinster Rangers obviously won it, I don't know, maybe five years ago.
And they'll have done it every way, yeah, from being dead and buried in Carlow, coming through Carlow unfavoured, beating Coola, like the team expected to go. We were all talking about a Coola Ballyhale final.
Yeah.
Winning a thriller then in the semi-final, and all against the All-Ireland champions. Like, this would be the perfect story for them. But I love those stories, like that Marty Kavanagh is talking about. I think it shows that you're never actually that far away from achieving what you want to achieve. Like, you know, maybe I'm just kidding myself, but... Like, you know, I've seen it in Banagher twice in Derry when they've had terrible seasons and they got relegated this year and then go on this amazing run to a semi-final. It's just about getting things together.
It's momentum,
at the right time,
is the big thing, the big M. Like, I mean, and these late goals to win games, they're the exact things that give you momentum. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's like, momentum is a big thing. There's no doubt about that. The other game yesterday on television was Kilcoo against Derrygonly. This was a boring game as far as I'm concerned. Two teams that I didn't think were very impressive. Disappointed with Kilcoo. There wasn't much talk about the goal. I thought it was illegal. It was an interesting one, but I've asked the referee this morning and he says he would have given it. So this is a free which is brought up, mm-hmm. and instead of going up to where the new free is called for, the ball was kicked maybe, no, it wasn't actually on the spot of the first free. It went maybe halfway and then kicked.
Yeah.
As the Derrygonly lads kind of were turned their backs running back to set up in front of the new free. And for me, that can't be allowed then, can it? Like, I mean, but the referee told me this morning he kicked it from a less advantageous position.
Yeah.
So you actually can. So it was the Derrygonly players that were at fault for turning their back on any free. So now I kind of accept that. Still, it felt a little bit of a weird one.
I always just thought you could just take a free from behind the line, like, you know, wherever it was. The same with a sideline or something, as long as you referred her back.
Right, so he took it behind forward. The line of the new one.
Yeah, and right. I, like, to be honest, when you look back at the replay of the goal, it is a criminal. That I think the Derrygonly players are spend a lot of time remonstrating with the ref, and you can see, like, has it the fullback? He just sort of drifts into space. He comes from way behind the play and just walks, and then suddenly starts running with his hands out, and nobody makes an effort to go to him. Meanwhile, the centre back has gone up with him. Just very sloppy.
Aaron Brannigan. Yeah, so Derrygonly probably were at fault. I thought looking at it, something might have looked a little bit illegal, but it wasn't. Derrygonly, like, were well into the game. The 21 chances to Kilcoo's 14. Kilcoo, I thought were very poor. There was none of the, like, didn't look like a Mickey Moran team. They weren't pressing up high. They weren't aggressive. They were dropping off. And it just seemed like a very laboured performance, because we know Kilcoo on paper are better than Derrygonly, and they took their chances. They took their chances better, and that was kind of it. They were saved by their goalkeeper, Martin McCourt, who had an absolutely phenomenal save early in the game from Shane McGullion, the Derrygonly centre-back. My God, what a save that was. He was going... You would have thought this was going the other side of the goal, and his weight seemed to shift, and he just put up the strongest hand you'll ever see at the very last second. It was an incredible save,
and to stop himself from jumping to the left, like, he just managed to jump back instead. And as you say, his weight had completely gone the other direction, and he actually saw the fans behind cheering, because he probably thought the keeper was gone. The ball looked straight on for the top corner, and then just this gadget arm that comes out.
Because it wasn't a soft shot. Like, that needed to be a strong arm. And just, like, I mean, it was a really hard shot, so you needed to have a strong hand on it. So, like, I mean, that man's definitely been in the gym over the winter months building up their clock. One thing that really annoyed me at the end was, you're 2 points down. you've got 5 minutes of injury time. You're 2 minutes into injury time. There's about 3 minutes left. Mm. And Derry Gonnelly need a goal, or they need 2 points. And they start playing a possession game and they're going over and back and over and back. And I counted maybe at least 45 seconds that they ran down on their own clock. Now, they eventually got a point from play. But by the time the next kick out came out then, they had a half attack. And then, you know, Kilcoo got a breakaway point to put two in it. But like, I mean, there comes a point where you have to let caution draw, you know, throw caution to the wind. And that possession game over and back, while it makes so much perfect sense during the game, personally, I think teams overdo it. Mm. Like, I think there's a point in a lot of those attacks where it can go in and a man, you know, takes the easy option of throwing it back or not taking a ball, not risking anything. Yeah. So I do think that the possession game, while it is the correct thing to do, not to give the opposition an easy turnover, I think it completely be overdone. But to overdo it at that point of the game, mate, make something happen at that point. And if you get, if take your man on, draw two men, then pass it. Someone has to come. The thing of aimlessly passing it around at that stage of the game, I was shouting at the telly going, do you want to win this or not, lads?
Yeah, like they're definitely too many, like this isn't every team. There are too many players who don't want to make something happen. But I think that that comes from the culture where like you're not allowed to make a mistake and you can't, like, as much as it's stupid where like they're not doing anything in the end, you can't be the person to kick that ball away.
Yeah.
When you're a point down. You don't, like, you know, you don't want to be the person who loses the match. They lose the match themselves then because they all don't do anything with it. But it's just a culture. And like, that's interesting. Like, we've all worked in training on keeping the ball when you're a point up or 2 points up and running the clock down, you know, like managing possession. But have you ever really worked in a scenario where you're a point down or 2 points down and you need to get a score against a packed defence and you can't wait? Like, that doesn't seem to happen a lot in coaching. Like, you know, like, do you go, right, lads, we have 30 seconds to get a score, let's go get one. It's always just like the other way.
You're hoping for a moment of inspiration rather than actually have something planned for that or for a goal if you're 2 points down. No, I accept that. Then Kilcoo broke away. They got a free for overcarrying, and it was Ryan Johnston that got a fisted point. We're allowing that fisted point because I put two in it. I thought Conlon Gilligan was very good after the match. He was interviewed and he was kind of smiling, going, I know a lot of people are against us this point. I like a fisted point, he says. We know how good a player Conlon Gilligan was. So we'll allow him that. That was an unusual one, being the kind of clever footballer. I would have thought he'd like to see the net rattle a little bit more. But no, he fancies a fisted point.
Yeah.
I'll accept the fisted point in that scenario. It was perfectly right thing to do.
I don't think he would have done it if he was playing back in the day. He would have looked for the net or looked for the pass for the goal.
You didn't know that he loved the fist point. I didn't know it either before that that interview.
Great addition though. Like, he was in the Derry team for what, 15 years or something, and just great crack as well, like, you know, more than anything.
I don't want to judge Kilcoo on yesterday because every game is different, you know, like, I mean, but there was a lot of things about Kilcoo yesterday that weren't good. There's no doubt about that. I thought they were better than that, and they have, their forwards are too good. Ryan Johnson spends too much time back. The centre forward, McGinn, he spends too much time back. So they actually tried to play a kicking game into Conor Laverty and Jerome Johnston, right? They're kind of isolated in there, and they try to get it down to them quick. But what's the point? Mm. Conor Laverty win it. He's not big enough to take his man on, so he's going to have to wait for somebody. Unless they have support, they've nothing.
Yeah.
And Jerome Johnson's not the biggest fella in the world. So unless they get their shape right and go, okay, that's okay. But if Conor Laverty doesn't have someone coming with him, he doesn't have the game to be able to take it from there, if you know what I mean. He's more of a, would he not be better in front of two? And let him, you know, win an initial ball and then be able to play some intricate, nice little forward play with two inside. Do you get me?
Yeah.
I don't understand that now. But again, you can't judge them just based off one game. Because in fairness, Derry Gonnelly were attacking from everywhere as well. And their centre back was getting up there. So, you know, means their centre forward was following him. You know, it's hard to know exactly without being at the game how Kilcoo wanted to set up front.
Yeah, like that sounds like a tactic for Cathal McShane and Matty Donnelly, like, you know, who can win the ball and turn and run past
that works
man.
With them because they can take it from there.
Yeah,
you know,
but it doesn't work necessarily with Mark Bradley or Lee Brennan. They need someone coming off them that they play with.
Exactly. Aaron Brannigan was interviewed after the game and it was a very good interview, and he said it was a brilliant game. Disagree with that, Aaron, but I could start this again. It was a brilliant game, very tough and very well refereed. That's the way we like it, nice and tough. So we'll be looking forward to the next game now. I really like that line. That's the way we like it, nice and tough. He says, there's nothing else to do in Kilcoo except play football. You go to mass, you have a few sheep, and that's really all it is. So football is absolutely everything. To get here again is absolutely brilliant. So To have a few sheep, what does that mean? Have relations with a few sheep? Or is that, that's just a bit of a childish joke? But basically, it was the picture we were painting here last Thursday about Kilcoo being a little village and just mad about Gaelic football, and that's all that's there. And we were comparing it to a mini Schlocknail. Didn't know they were all sheep farmers in Kilcoo as well. So they're hard men.
Yeah, it is. It's just fitting that Mickey Moore is there with them now. After winning the Ulster three times at Schlocknail, he's come to this little place again in Down, who have managed to win the Ulster. And now this is the third time that they're back in it. And I think they might have a good chance. Like, you know, even though they didn't look good the other day, just the Moore factor, the Kilcoo factor, the sheep factor. Can't rule them out.
The sheep factor. That's the first time that's ever been said on this on this show. What analysis. Obviously, it was Paul Devlin who sent it forward for Kilcoo. So he should be hopefully maybe holding the centre forward position as much as possible if he can. Right, Austin Stacks were absolutely humiliated. So 2-17 to 5 points. This is a real standout result. And God, thank God none of us went for Austin Stacks last Thursday. Jeez. We wouldn't have anyways, because their manager, Wayne Quinlan, said after the game, he said there's a million things you could put a performance like that down to. You could use the excuse about not having any real competitive games in the last couple of weeks, but I don't believe in that at all. We just weren't at the races. We didn't show up. We had a game plan. We had a lot of homework done in Nemo, but game time, you can't beat game time. Now he's kind of making excuses. Yeah. He says they seem sharper on the breaking ball. They look more comfortable than us. Their shot accuracy was fantastic compared to ours. One of the lads said they had 31 attacks as opposed to our 10. I'm not sure how accurate that stat is, if it's just one of the lads saying it. But, like, I mean, this has to stop now, this experiment. That's a humiliation for Kerry football, especially after East Kerry's performance last weekend, you know, against Dr. Crokes. I know they can't move into the Munster club, but Dr. Crokes should be the ones moving into the Ulster club. There'd be only a week after competitive action. They'd still be, you know, a lot more, they'd have a lot more, you know, competitive football recently. Austin Stacks hadn't played since the end of September, where they're out of the championship. When you go out of the championship, let's be honest, you're not looking after yourself for the next month. It's a stupid rule. And with East Kerry looking like they could dominate club football in Kerry for the next maybe 5 years, well, then this needs to be changed back. Winning a county title back in April, when every club might not be, you know, at full tilt, you know, should not be a way of getting into the Munster club football.
Yeah. Does it take away from the county championship, though, if...
Maybe that's the carrot that's trying to give the county championship in April more relevance. Yeah. And they're using that to say, look, well, it's more prestigious now, you're going to represent. But the evidence of this, that's not good enough. Because let's be honest, Austin Stacks played until the end of September. What if you're out, you know, a little bit earlier than even than that, you know? So,
yeah.
Like, I mean, it doesn't make sense. Like, there's no way the Kerry champions should be getting destroyed, to the point where Nemo Rangers manager Paul O'Donovan said, we have 35, 36 in a panel, and some of the best tests we have is our A versus B games. Now, I don't think he meant that as an insult to Austin Stacks, but if he's talking about the best test they get being their B team ahead of the Kerry champions... Well, that's a wake-up call for the Kerry... No, but it is. Yeah. It's a wake-up call for the Kerry County Board. And you'd be disappointed with Austin Stacks for going there and being hammered like that.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Kerry obviously had a team in the All-Ireland final last year. It's not long since they won it, the All-Ireland Championship. Now they're out in the first round, losing by 18 points.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's very weird. I can see why they don't want to... Because then it just becomes like not a pre-season tournament, but just a tournament in April that doesn't mean as much.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean as much. It was all the other one's always the big. It's always the big one, you know. So it just doesn't mean as much. Maybe it gives the teams club football in April, and what more? Like, is that not enough? You know that should serve its purpose. Is that Clonmel Commercials won a dour game? It's been described as. We're going to talk to Seamus Kennedy in part two of this. Seemed to be a battle, anyways. They beat Milltown by 13 points 4 years ago, the last time we were in it. So it looked like Milltown had their homework done, definitely on them. So we'll talk to Seamus. About that. Commercials obviously play Nemo in the final now, and that's a repeat of the 2015 final that Commercials won with a goal 2 minutes into injury time. 62nd minute, Seamus Kennedy kicks a long ball into Michael Quinlivan, goal. Clonmel Commercials, All-Ireland, or Munster champions at that stage. Saturday night then, they have Connell back in the final. first final since 2010. John McEntee was all praise for them. They had a good solid defensive structure and we probably needed to be 6-1 up. As it turns out, Niamh Connell went 6-1 up and then he continued on. They got the dream start they wanted and then they could defend it and we just kept running into trouble. We forced it. We were trying too hard without being smart about it. And he says they're a good team. They can defend and they know how to break defences down. I suppose we didn't play how we wanted to play. We didn't play to our own standard and that's the bit that would disappoint us. So, like, I mean, you know, the better team won. There's no doubt about that. Even though Clontibret just not good enough for Niamh Connell, it's fair to say. Just the better team won. Like they dominated the first half, and even though Clontibret got back, you know, within striking distance, it never really looked like they could beat them.
No, like in the they're just supremely fit, Niamh Connell, and they smothered Clontibret's kickouts. They have pace as well. Like actually, after like you know 30-40 minutes of watching it. It's like, oh, come on, Clontibret. Like, you know, Niamh Connell is so good at keeping the ball. And when you're sort of looking for the game to be a bit closer, you would like to see a few more dispossessions. But the way Niamh Connell break, it just pushes the yellow jerseys back behind the ball. Yeah. And then it always gives them space behind. And after a while, you're like, can someone just take a risk? You know what's going back. Can someone try and cut that off? But they never did for 60 minutes. And
if you attack, this is the thing. Like, I mean, you can defend with everyone, you can attack with everybody, and you can leave loads of space without any sweeper if you're sure that you will never give the ball away at the other end. And Niamh Connell don't give the ball away generally at the other end. They're supremely coached at holding onto the ball and not giving it away.
Mm.
And without that risk of that turnover ball, sure, you can attack with everyone.
Yeah.
And you're safe in the knowledge that you can attack with everyone. And when you attack with everybody, and if the ball does get broken down, they're just programmed to follow that ball back.
Mm.
Everybody.
Everybody. You know? And then they are just...
It's basketball, really, isn't it?
And they're so mean in defence. Like very few teams, I'd say, love defending as much as they do. Like, they just get such a kick out of it. And
they get their bodies on the line. And look, they are a defensive team. No matter how, I know they like to say that they're not, and Owen McGettigan said in after the match, we'll talk about him in performance of the weekend, he was talking about them being a little bit more offensive in Ulster, but they are a defensive team and I think they should own that and say that's what we are, but we're bloody good at it, and at this time of the year that's not easy to beat. But they've a lot of very good footballers and a lot of players that are really, really good on the ball, you know, comfortable on the ball. Mm. Whether you might like to see them being a little bit more offensive, or maybe take a few more risks. There's a lot of throwing it over and back and waiting and waiting, and then they can pop up and just see a 2-on-1 and score.
Like it's obviously a 10-year-old argument. They should just be, like, as you say, owning it. They're a defensive team. So, like, they're in the Ulster final. Like they don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
They don't owe us anything or anything else. And it's actually amazing. Yeah, nobody seems to want to take a stupid shot. Like there's normally somebody in a club team who'll panic and just kick it away, but Anthony Thompson seems to be on the ball all the time. Like it's usually a hand pass into somebody else and then it comes back to him, and wherever he is in the pitch, he seems to be controlling everything. And then McGettigan just adds that bit of touch of class.
Did you see this point that Plunkett for Ballintubber scored against Corrifin the other day? He just came up from centre back and from about 5 metres inside the 45, he just kicked over lovely score. Those points are on all the bloody time.
Yeah.
All the time. Why don't lads try for those? Kieran Thompson got a spectacular one. But those kind of shots are on. Remember Tony Kernan got one against Clontibret when he came on.
Yeah.
Why don't lads just go for a shot from there? More. The amount of times they're turned down is just incredible, just for a recycle. It's like, I don't know. I don't get it, because you don't get enough space. You imagine if you get into space, right, I've kicked points from here before.
Yeah.
I might try one here from here and get my name on the score sheet. What's wrong with getting your name on the score sheet from a bit of a distance?
Because the risk is you won't score, and there's a lot wrong with kicking the ball away then. Like, you know, and you're like,
Kick it dead. Nothing wrong with kicking it dead.
That's the thing. Like, that's what you're always told. Like, as long as it goes dead, that's fine. But like, it doesn't always go dead is the problem. And I always remember someone asking Paddy Bradley, why do you kick the ball so high? And he's like, well, because coaches have been telling me my whole life to not drop it short. You know, that's even for free kicks, he would balloon it up into the air, like, just to make sure
right.
he was leaving space between the crossbar and the ball. But yeah, like I think when you're coached so much to get the ball into the scoring zone, it's very easy then to defend that, because you know where the team wants to go.
Exactly, yeah.
But Desi Moan lined somebody up. He came late onto a break. The ball got moved across. He just pretended to shoot and ran past him.
There's always space out there. You get a one-on-one when you give it out to that side. It's what he wants to do with it. And too often, that will be sent back the way it came.
Yeah. What are you going to do with a one-on-one?
The Desi Moen one is a good example because he actually made something happen when he got it. So Anthony Thompson, Leo McLoon, Dermot Malloy, Brendan McDyer, Owen Wade, Marty Boyle, Stephen McGrath are all still on the go since Niamh Connell were in the final in 2010. That's 9 years ago. That's a fair old bunch of that team to keep together. So great stuff to them. Want to give a shout out to Thomas McCurtains, who won the British Junior Football Championship. They asked me on Twitter, and there's a few Laois lads on it I wasn't aware of. They won the British Junior Football Championship. Congratulations to them. There won't be a cow milked in wherever they're from.
I was panicking there. Thought, I was like, here, this wasn't on the notes, really. Am I going to have to start talking about Thomas McCurtains?
I just wrote it down. Two other big results in the intermediate hurling was Taureen from Mayo beat Kinvara from Galway. So that doesn't happen every day of the week, even though I think Taureen won it a couple of years ago. And the big one in the intermediate hurling was in Ulster, where Owen Rua of Tyrone beat Nevena from Antrim. 220 to 220 in normal time. Nevena won it on penalties. What was the score on penalties? 1-0. Like, I mean, every penalty missed except for Cormac Ross. So congratulations to Cormac Ross. Everyone else stunk it out of it, but you held up your side of the bargain, scored a penalty. I suppose when you're wrecked at that stage and a hurling penalty, you'd imagine out of 10 penalties there should be more than one.
Yeah.
So they won it 1-0. It was their first ever Ulster Intermediate Hurling title, so maybe there was some nerves out there. So Owen Rua from Tyrone, or Nevena, sorry, from Antrim. So congratulations to them.
That's amazing. Yeah, they went on that run in the football last year as well, and now their hurling's obviously going well. Fair play to them.
Yeah, exactly. So Pádraig Joyce, talked about him last week and his Colin Parkinson-esque predictions for Galway. So he came on in the second half when Killer Aaron Juniors beat, I'm not sure who they beat actually, Loughrea, 115 to 15 points. And then I was wondering, Pádraig Joyce is only a year older than me. Why the hell is he not on their junior team? How is he only coming on for the juniors? So he kicked several good points and he won a penalty for his brother, Tommy, who I remember played for Galway as well. So I thought that was an interesting one, unless obviously he's not training, but sure, we all know you don't have to train at junior level if you're an ex-intercounty player. That's the rules. Those rules apply at junior level. Pádraig Joyce has showed up. Jeez, he hasn't been here with us all day. Number 11.
Yeah. Finally. Yeah.
And then you say to the centre forward, look, come on, you can just, yeah. I'll deal with you after.
Yeah, well, he can just go to number 10 and then you can worry about the number 10 after.
Number 15 gets pushed out maybe or whatever. There'll be one of those six forwards knows, look, the team's stronger with him on it.
Yeah, and like, you're safe when it's Pádraig Joyce. This isn't like, you know, somebody who hasn't been training and he gets your place in the team. Like, nobody's going to listen to this lad bitching and moaning afterwards.
No.
That Pádraig Joyce played ahead of him.
Imagine being in the pub after winning, saying, after Joyce starting and winning the game for you, that's bullshit. He should
that's a fucking joke here.
He should never have started. What? And you instead?
Everybody will just turn away from him. Like, you know?
That is one argument you will never win. You have to take your medicine. It would be terrible if it was you, it has to be said, but listen, that's the way the world works. Last one have here, Conan, is Graham Geraghty's medals have been stolen. You hear about this every now and then with different players. None of the others jump to my mind now. Maybe they'll jump to your mind, but I've definitely read it before. Graham Geraghty's wife said on Facebook, there's not much, they're not worth much in monetary value. But it took blood, sweat and tears to win these over a period of 11 years. So one minor, two under-21s and three senior, a lifetime of memories taken. We will gladly give you the cash for the gold shops we'll give you for them and more. So I didn't think Graham Geraghty won three senior All-Irelands. He won one in 96 and 99. One minor. Anyways, that's only a small detail. But I don't know, are All-Ireland medals worth anything? What are you going to do with them? Just give them back? Then again, the type of people who rob these houses, beat up old people, the chances of them feeling bad about this and realising they're not, they could be thrown into a river or something. So the only thing you could do is appeal to anyone that knows, you know, who did it or whoever they are. What's the point in keeping them? You're not going to get anything for them, and it'll be worth more to you if you give them back. So I suppose that's whatever appeal for my favourite footballer growing up. When I read it, I just went, ah.
It's shite.
Yeah, it is shite. It is shite. Right, okay, we'll come back with Seamus Kennedy.
Advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glenroy on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
All right, so yesterday's Munster semi-final was described as the Kennedy Show. The three brothers scored the last 4 points of the game to bring Clonmel Commercials from 2 down to win by 2. Seamus Kennedy joins us on the line now. Not a bad ring to that, is there, Seamus? The Kennedy Show.
Yeah, not a bad ring to it. I suppose I'm actually not related to Jack O'Connell, though, is the only catch to that. They're actually John Kennedy's sons that hurled with Tip in 89 and 91. And Coleman is their brother, so the three boys are brothers. I'm not related to them at all, but everyone makes that mistake.
Jesus, so, yeah.
I'm always known as John Kennedy's son, is what's always said. But no, the three boys are brothers anyway, and I'm blowing.
Right, so it was Conal's score in the 56th minute that kind of set you off. You were 2 down at that stage. He scored a screamer from 55 yards out.
Yeah, Gaff Conal, yeah, he's the youngest of the three boys, you know, and great to have the likes of him breaking through. Like, and really adds, and the kid, as you said, an absolute wonder score. Like, he bet, I don't know, 3 or 4 lads on the touchline. Unbelievable score, and really got us going, because it had been a bit of a stalemate in the second half. Until then, we couldn't break Milltown down, in fairness, and that really got us going.
Well, that was it, because the last time you were in Munster, you hammered Milltown. So did they go kind of defensive? Judging by the scoreline, you'd imagine it was a defensive game.
Yeah, I don't think it really was, to be honest with you, but in fairness, we played Milltown in 2015, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think it would have been their first county final, their first one in a while, and it was their first time into Munster, and we had been there a couple of years beforehand, and we kind of got off to a good start in Clonmel that day, and even though we went on to win Munster that year, that was probably the best we played all year, was probably that day against Milltown, and
right,
they were probably hurting a bit from that as well, and down there it's very difficult conditions as well. Like, there was a very strong breeze yesterday, so like, they scored a point in the second half against the Breeze. We only scored 3 against us in the first half playing against it, you know. So it was just one of those kind of days where you just have to dog it out. And yeah, thankfully we got there. But I don't think it was an overly negative game really at all, to be honest with you. Like, both teams did go for it. It was just one of those games that was low scoring.
Right. Because it just turned into a battle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as I said, the wind was so strong down there. So it was just very hard to score into the top goals there. But yeah, turned into a real battle, and it's great. Probably our experience of being in Munster a couple of times more than they had the last couple of years maybe showed us all this, and we were just delighted to get over the line. And we knew coming down it was going to be like that, you know, that it wasn't going to be a repeat of a couple of years ago as it was in Clonmel.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, you're used to tight games, I suppose. Your county semi-final was fairly fairly dramatic. It went to extra time and you needed to pull a few scores. I think you scored the last 3 points of the game. You got 2 of them to get over that line. So it's not, you've been in games. Obviously, I'm thinking of the Munster final in 15 as well, where you got the goal in the last minute against Nemo as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been on the end of a few good results like that in tight games. But as you said there, the Lochmore game has really stood to us. Like, that was a cracking game of football. Like, you know, finished 115 apiece or something after an hour of time or something like that. And it's never easy against them. And they do test you in every single way, like, in fairness to Lochmore, and it went either way. So, and that game has really stood to us. Because, you know, if you're getting over a game like that against Lochmore, you know, you had done something right. And again, like, the best thing about yesterday was, even though we hadn't scored for the first 15 minutes of the second half, there wasn't any panic, which was great to see as well, you know.
I see your manager, Charlie McKeever, said something about that you started kicking the ball near the end of the game. Like, I mean, there can be an overemphasis of possession. I was watching Kilcoo, Derry Gonley. I wouldn't say you saw that, but this kind of idea, I know possession is important, but you can overdo that too without taking a risk and just getting it in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we finally got or broke Milltown down that way, and that's probably a bit of credit to them as well. They targeted a lot of their kickers, and they put an awful lot of pressure on us high up the field.
and didn't let us break out from the back as well as we'd have liked. But eventually we kind of got Jack on a bit of ball and got Michael Conlivan inside and kicked ball into the himself and Sean O'Connor and started winning it, and the runners came off them then. So it was probably down to probably us finally getting going, but as well, Milltown had defended us really, really well and didn't let us kick the ball in as well. So it was a bit of a combination of both. But as you said, we finally got there in the last 15 minutes. In fairness to us, we probably did do all the pushing and looked more likely to score.
What are you doing to poor Michael Quinlivan? He's dying to go away travelling and you keep winning matches.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's a problem for him anyway that he's pushed out by a few weeks. There won't be too much sympathy if we can get over the line the next day for him. But I know, look, in fairness, it's just one of these things, isn't it? But look, hopefully he has to delay it by a couple of weeks.
Oh, he'll delay it and then he'll have the big hold up over Christmas then, hopefully, from your point of view. And he won't get going until next March or whatever, whenever the... Oh, no, the final's in January. But sure, look, we're not going to look too far ahead here.
Yeah.
Come here, what's it like getting back into the football after playing hurling all year, you know, at such a high level? Do you need a bit of readjustment to get your eye back in? I know everyone talks about getting your eye back in for hurling, but do you need to do it the other way coming back to football?
Yeah, definitely do. Like you go a few months without kicking the ball or something like that, it could go anywhere, you know. So it does take a couple of weeks, but no, look, I love getting back to commercials. As I said, like I've been hurling all year with St. Mary's and with Tip, and it's great to just freshen things up, you know, for a couple of months, and you're really looking forward to them. I suppose when you're involved with such a good team as well and good lads there as well, that really makes it. Like there's some brilliant club lads there as well involved with commercials, and you know, when you get on runs like we did in 2015 and like we're in a bit of a run again here now this year, like it really shortens the winter, like, and it keeps the body ticking over too as well. And no, I love playing football as well, so really enjoying it.
Well, that's the thing, see, because you're from play with Clonmel Commercials, and Clonmel is a big footballing part of Tipperary, and I was thinking you were a football man playing hurling, but it's not that at all. You're a hurling man playing football, because I was reading some quotes when you were called back in. You played with the footballers in 2015 with Tipperary, and then you were called into the Tip squad by Michael Ryan. The decision was a no-brainer for me, even though I grew up in Clonmel playing with Commercials. We were very successful. The only thing I wanted to do was playing hurling with Tip. I'm very disappointed here, Seamus. You're actually a hurling man, not a football man.
Yeah. I suppose growing up, as you said, I played as much hurling as I did football, and at times probably a lot more football because Commercials were successful. We were reasonably successful with St. Mary's, but not to the same degree as we were with Commercials. But look, my dream in life was always to play hurling for Tip, and that probably came from Dad bringing me to matches, and Dad is a massive... Tipperary hurling fan as well, so was always going to Tip matches and things like that, and well, I absolutely loved it. It's just there wasn't as much hurling played down around Clonmel in school and anything like that, so I went to school in Turlough CBS then for a couple of years, and just really really pushed me on, I suppose, to make the minor panels and things like that.
Yeah, so you obviously football's the poor relation in Tipperary, but in Clonmel the hurling is the poor relation. But Mary's who you play for, you've won two minors and an intermediate in the last couple of years, so you seem to be on the rise.
Yeah, we have, you know, won two county minor A titles, which would be fairly unheard of for a South team, and especially a Clonmel team. It was our first ever A hurling title, like, you know, so it was an unbelievable breakthrough for us, and it's followed up the following year with a lot of the same group of lads. They're just an exceptional bunch. We brought you a good few of them in the intermediate. We got up to senior, we're in Senior B now, have had a kind of two disappointing years in Senior B. So just hoping that we can kind of kick on again, maybe, you know, with all those lads when they get that bit of experience and settled in college and, you know, that kind of stuff. So a lot of them have moved away to college and work in different places like that. So kind of hope that maybe they'll kind of settle down now again and, I call it, will drive things on again, because as I said, they're a great group and there's a lot of great good hurlers there. Yeah. And a lot of them are playing football as well, so hopefully this year, like, you know, they have another taste for success again will help that.
Right, okay, so they'll be choosing the football when they're in Clonmel, I'm sure. Come here, just talking about the football being the poor relation in Tipperary, I saw it was Eamon Corcoran, was J.K. Bracken's chairman, and he was giving out about the final being on like at 2:30 on a Saturday, and maybe that's to save, or not to put it on the same day as a Munster club semi-final, and just seemed like a poor time to have the showpiece football final in Tipperary on at a time when people would be working and everything. What's your thoughts on that, or will football ever get equal standing in Tipperary?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I don't know the ins and outs for putting the game on the Saturday. What, like, I'm not 100% sure whether because the Munster club is on the Sunday, I actually don't know. It is this way because the county final, I suppose, was between two town teams in the football history. So you have Templemore and Clonmel. So there's a lot of people with businesses and things like that, or part-time jobs for supporters or brothers and sisters of players that want to go watch the game. So probably not ideal. In that regard, great for the players who want to take Monday off. not ideal for people trying to go to the game and promoting, as you said, their football in the county. But I don't know all the ins and outs for that decision, really. Like, so it's above my pay grade.
Yeah, no, well, that's fair enough. Come here, I want to talk to you before we finish up about the year with Tipperary, obviously. You were out of favour for the start, and Tipperary were destroying teams in Munster, and I'm sure you were thinking, Jesus, here's a new manager. Does he fancy me, or am I ever going to get in there?
Yeah, I suppose the lads started the Munster Championship so well, and it was just so many lads were playing so well at the time and training and everything. Like, the panel was seriously competitive, and I knew I wasn't a million miles away, but just at the time I wasn't playing as well as I needed to be to be as the other lads were. Like, and look, the way the championship is now in the hurling, it's a long year with a lot of games, but you just have to keep at it. And, you know, thankfully I got a chance and, you know, got in. But as I said, it was probably more due down to how well lads were playing in training, and that it was just hard to break in, really. And Liam was very open, and he, you know, for feedback and that kind of thing. So I never lost faith or anything like that. You know,
right.
It was great to have that, you know, that if I kept doing my thing or getting to the level that I knew I could get to, that, you know, I could get a chance here. And thankfully I did.
Yeah, so you got the chance, obviously, for the Munster final. That didn't actually go well, the result. But, like, I mean, was that just from literally from starting to perform better in the training games?
Yeah, it is, exactly. And in fairness, Liam and the lads are very good that way, that it is who's doing their stuff. And Dr. Morris on a Tuesday and Thursday or whatever nights for training, like, they're the lads that are going to play. Like, so, you know, going to training, that if you're doing your stuff, you're going to be in a good shout. And thankfully, I picked up a bit of form as the summer wore on and got my chance.
Right, okay. So I think you came in then, you were late call up. You weren't in the programme for the Munster final or the All-Ireland semi-final, and you were picked full back against that. I don't think you played full back in that game. It was almost like he picked an entire defence of halfbacks against Wexford.
Yeah, it was a bit of a horses for courses backline RH. Yeah, so yeah, look, I found out during the week and I'm delighted to get the call. And, you know, it's great to be playing in those big games, and especially the way the Wexford game turned out, the way we just ground out a victory. You know, it was a really special day up in Croke Park. So I was absolutely delighted, and to keep the spot down for the final, like, it was great after a long year, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You're involved in real classics against Galway. You won and lost those ones, but that Wexford game must have been unique.
Yeah, it was very unique. And I think even meeting the Tipperary supporters after that game, a lot of them, the older Tipperary supporters, felt that was one of their best days in Croke Park, which felt a bit surreal, and that it wasn't a final. And but I just think the way they saw us dig in, and we were down to 14 men and everything seemed to be going against us, that they just, the emotion after that game was huge. And you know, it did really hit home that, like, it was a special victory. Like, that is a really good Wexford team that are really coming strong, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. And come here, just, like, I suppose on how Wexford play, because there was a lot of talk recently about, you know, Waterford and Wexford, and they were maybe defensive, but Wexford have kind of changed up a little bit with the cornerbacks attacking and, you know, attacking from their half-back line a lot. And for me, we talk about it on the hurling show here, that I think Davey borrows some tactics from Gaelic football, which you would probably be very well aware of from, you know, playing with Tipperary and Clonmel commercials. Do you see some sort of crossover in the tactics now? And you see Kieran Donaghy with Galway, and apparently he's working on some movement up front, you know, with maybe a two-man full forward line. Do you see all that kind of talk coming in?
Yeah, well, not so much talk, but I just think there is an overlap in a lot of the stuff that's going on. Like, especially teams are valuing possession a lot more. Like, as you said, they're at Wexford, Waterford, even Limerick, like, you know, they rarely ever waste the ball, you know. And but that's the way football has gone as well. Like, cause if you lose the ball in football, you could be a long time waiting to get it back, you know. And definitely teams are starting to value the ball a lot more and trying to use it a lot more precisely, I suppose. But yeah, there's definitely a bit of a crossover, all right. And even things like tackling, I find now in the back, like, there's, you know, there's a big crossover. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it develops again.
What would the crossover in tackling be? Because hurling tackling always kind of interests me in that you can't actually put your hands on the man, right? So in football, you know, you'd be able to stand a lad up a lot more using your body.
Yeah, exactly. But you can do that a lot too, I suppose, in the hurling. You can stand a lad up. And just even being, I think, as touch tight in the football. You know, in football, you're absolutely touch tight. Say a cornerback or whatever. And in hurling, like if you can be that tight and just the movement of a corner forward and things like that, it can really help, you know, to stop them getting possession and things like that. And then, you know, the forward has to play the ball too. So it's saying in football, so it's 4, 5, 6, or 7 steps, whatever forward gets now. You know, so you're trying to wait to see like what they're going to do, and then can you try and pounce and take it off and things like that. So I just think there's a crossover in that kind of that regard anyway. You know,
is that the thing in hurling? Traditionally, hurling defenders went out to hurl rather than go out to man mark defenders. Do you know what I mean? They wanted to hurl their own patch, or, you know, be on the ball a bit more. That they didn't. It's just not the culture in hurling to actually say, I'm giving up my game completely just to mark him out of it.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it has been. And but I think you find now, like, a lot of teams have a guide to do with that, maybe on a player and things like that as well. So most teams probably have a player that they can pick on if they, or to call on if they need to do a job on a certain player. To just, look, you're there to spoil them for the hour, I'm afraid. They're not going to do a whole pile of hurling. And I think every team probably has those type of players. You know, so it's important too. The art of defending is a difficult one, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Come here, you mentioned steps, and straight away, which jumped to my mind, was the Ballyvoden centre back. Was it Nilsson? It was in Portlaoise in 15. I counted at that time 15 steps. I don't want to drag up bad memories.
You had to bring it up, didn't you?
Well, you brought up the steps, so it's just a natural thing for me to have said. It's not down in my notes here.
Look, to be honest with you, it's the one game I just haven't been able to watch back. It's just more than unfortunate. I'll have to take the ground with it. It felt at the time that he'd taken an awful lot. As I said, I haven't watched it back or anything like that, but it's frustrating. Right? It is frustrating. But look, we probably should have seen out the game besides that anyway. You know, we were 3 points up going into injury time and should have seen the game out. But so I don't know, disappointing one.
Yeah, no, definitely. To finish up, sure, Nemo obviously hammered Austin Stacks yesterday. It's hard to even know what to read into that, you know, with Austin Stacks being the champions from back in April and not having played since September. Nemo will obviously owe you one, Seamus. You gave in that long ball into Michael, who got the goal 2 minutes into injury time, I think it was, back in 15. So that, look, it sets up a great final with two footballing teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've often played Nemo in challenge matches before and things like that. And they've always been great games, you know. Look, they're there nearly every year or close to it, like, for a reason. They're a serious side, and, you know, their team has changed since a few years as well. You know, the likes of Mark Cronin and these guys in as well. So they're going to take a lot of watching, and we're under no illusions to how good they're going to be. Like, but as I said, like, we have a lot of players, good players as well, good quality, and we've been knocking around for a couple of years as well. And look, absolutely, they'll always win. But we're just really looking forward to it, and delighted to get over yesterday. But looking forward to Nemo as well. It's going to be a huge challenge.
Yeah, come here, listen, best of luck with it, Seamus. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother at all. Thanks very much.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out, and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Okay, Conan, so Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and our first nomination, it comes as no surprise, is James Doyle. You know, we've talked enough about his performance. He was interviewed after the game, and he was talking about Michael Ryan, their selector, who had a heart attack, I think, on the line with the win over Coola. and he's recovering in hospital still. So he says, I'd say he's a happy man now. To be honest with you, it's all for him. He's a great club man, and I'd say he's delighted up there now in Dublin. It was fantastic, I suppose, to have that on the television on TG Cahir, so that he's sitting up in the hospital, and we know they don't have Sky Sports up there in all those hospitals. Isn't that the argument? So they all have TG Cahir anyways. And he was sitting up, I'm sure, in the bed watching that, cheering them on. What? She's lucky he didn't get another heart attack towards the end of that match. I hope that's not an inappropriate joke. Definitely might have been tough on a lot of St Mullins supporters watching the end of that game.
Yeah, I'd say so. When James Doyle was saying they didn't really get to celebrate then off the back of the cooler one, obviously, but they can celebrate that.
They'll definitely have a few. I don't think at this stage of the game, celebrate on the Sunday night. The idea that you go on it all day Monday, I think all day Monday clubs outside of winning a final, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, going on it all day Monday after winning a game that's not a final, just for me in this day and age, feels wrong. You're a booze hound at that stage. It's like, come on.
Oh yeah. You know, you're doing it every 2 weeks then at that stage.
Yeah, you're getting your night out. Why dogging it with the next day, I think, is just, I think you're overstepping the mark. And if I was over a team, I wouldn't be shy about telling them that kind of thing, I'd give you any leeway you want after a game. We should all stick together, go out.
Yeah.
But the lads, they want to wake up the next morning and go on it all the next day, unless we have a cup on show. I'm not interested in you fellas. And hopefully it's a club that doesn't have a whole load of booze hounds and you lose half your team straight away.
What was that story? If anybody wants to leave now, they can leave.
Half the team just stroll on out. Okay, Aaron Branigan was outstanding for Kilcoo. Well, he's the best on show for Kilcoo. There wasn't that many other outstanding performances. He scored 1-1. He got a lovely point off his left and then got the goal late on. Kind of, there's something about an attacking centre back. There's something about a player with a number 6 on his back marauding forward that I love.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't care if you're playing wing back and you're wearing just a number 6. Maybe it's the fact that you're just bursting down the middle and there's something exciting about the middle being opened up and you're running down into it. We don't see it that much. The Derry Gonnelly centre-back was able to burst down the middle too. I love that. And I think specialist centre-half-backs are gone out of the game. Attacking centre-half-backs are definitely gone out of the game because their job is just to sit in front of the full back line. And I think we're losing a whole incredibly eye-catching part of Gaelic football.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting when you're half-back. I remember before Ulster football changed and I became a forward, I used to be wing-back, but sometimes you're playing cornerback, obviously hated it, but when you were in cornerback you could see the space opening up thinking, oh my god, I'd love to just go into that now. And I think that's the thing with the centre back, he's obviously holding the most important position in defence, but yeah, he knows then when it's right to go, like, you know, and then when he does go, he goes for it, like, and yeah, it's just always exciting, like, yeah.
And I don't think it's the hardest thing in the world to do. Like, I mean, your man's going to follow you, run after you. So there is a gap left at centre back. Your midfield drops back there. And this isn't rocket science or incredible risky tactic or anything. Just tell him, whenever you want to go, go. When you see it open, and go and let the lads that are aimlessly passing it around say, when he goes, I want to pop to him, and I want someone else maybe going with him then as well.
Yeah, that's what all the best centre backs used to do. Like, you know, when I think of like Henry Downey and Tom Kelly, you know, they knew when to hold and they knew when to go.
Henry Downey and Tom Kelly will be used of incredible. Jesus Christ, after Donny Kingston and Paddy Bradley used as an example of in a David Clifford conversation, you pull out Henry Downey and Tom Kelly as the best. Yes, we have to stop. Owen McGettigan, he was outstanding the other night. I think his first point was incredible in that he got the ball went back to goal. He turned one way and took a fierce hit from the Clontibret number 4 cornerback, who ended up back on his arse. McGettigan didn't even look like it took 1 ounce of energy out of him. He just turned back to his left and stroked it beautifully over the bar. I was like, Jesus, how has he made this look like it was? Yeah. That was just like a fly hitting off him. It reminded me of Neil McGee when Stephen O'Neill ran at him. Remember that time? Yeah. It was just Neil McGee's just get off.
Just David Moran
swatted him aside, yeah. David Moran. And then he's able to slot over a lovely point off his right hand side as well. Now, he didn't play in the Castle Rahan game, but he definitely, he's a young player. He definitely looks like a top quality player.
I still wonder, does he even now know that your man tried to nail him? Because he just didn't seem to have a clue about it. And it was so well timed. Like, the ball was in there, you're thinking, oh shit, he's in trouble here. And then
it looked like a hospital. You're turning. Oh, wait, don't turn that way. Yeah. You know,
bang. And then, oh, what? How did he end up on the ground? Meanwhile, he just swiveled the other way.
But nine times out of ten, he's on the ground and he's after taking a bad hit. And you know, there's people coming in to resuscitate him or get him back up into his feet.
It
turned out to be the fella who tried to line him up. God help that fella when he gets back into the dressing room and some of his teammates realise that this is after happening, because they don't take any prisoners with stuff like that. TJ Reid, geez, what more can we say about this? 2:14, my God. Incredible scoring. 11 were frees, 1 sideline, 1 penalty. So you do up the mats. He got 1-2 from play. Is there a better array of his skills? A penalty, bang. Sideline, bang. 11 frees, he's usually flawless. Goal from play, 3 points from play. Like, that's just, there's no other type of score you can get. There's no hand pass points in.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure he got a couple of the points off left and right as well, just to show the full array of what that man can do in a hurling field. And that's it. There's no more. What can we say about TJ Reid? TJ Reid looks a level above a lot of inter-county players. And we know he has his own business. It's a gym. And he looks on a physical level above all inter-county players at club level. Like, you look at Adrian Mullen beside him, he gets a point.
Yeah.
Adrian Mullen's brilliant. TJ Reid's hitting 2:14. Now, I know he's on the freeze, but at the same time, like, he's just this. At club level, it's almost not fair. What do you do? What does a club player do with him? Well, you put your inter-county player on him, but what if your inter-county player isn't even a man marker? You're just putting him on him for the sake of it. Jack Kelly for Rat Downey, Errol plays wing back for Leash, he played centre back. He was on Marty Kavanagh. Just because he's an inter-county player doesn't mean that's his game to be following Marty Kavanagh around everywhere. You know, you'd nearly be better off playing just a club player who just will completely sacrifice his own game.
Mm. He's 32 now as well, and this obviously isn't slowing down. I just can't get over how normal it's become that he can contribute 20 points in a match. 2:14, like, it's LeBron James sort of stats. You know, it's ridiculous.
No, it definitely is. Talking about, there's two more nominations, obviously, from the televised games, because that's obviously what we were able to see. Well, they're all from televised games except for TJ Reid, but that's just outrageous. Mark Kavanagh got 12 points for Rat Downey Earl. He did everything that he could in that game. 7 were frees, 1 65 and 4 from play. He was outstanding. One or two pot shots maybe he could have given in to Ross King. Like, I mean, if you've got your main scorer inside, you'd like to see your centre forward maybe bringing him into play a little bit more. But look, when you're not, he knocked over some absolutely spectacular points, so you can't fault him too much. And Marty Kavanagh then got 1-9 for St Mullins, 1-2 from play, 7 frees. He got an absolutely sensational goal. And geez, like, I mean, not many club teams have Marty Kavanagh and James Doyle at 11 and 14. Now, I wouldn't play James Doyle ever at 14 based on what I saw of him. You'd be playing him number 12 or 10 and letting him in around that area all the time. But then him and Marty Kavanagh, like, they're serious, serious individuals. Like, the top level players in the country.
Yeah, I would just give James Doyle any jersey and just say go wherever you want. Just win the game for us, please.
Oh, you could play James Doyle midfield, you could play him wing forward, anywhere where you can win your own ball, because he's so good at it. Just go out there and do that. You think maybe he's completely wasted in the full forward line. So who are we going to give? Well, sure, look, there's no one else we can give performance the weekend to other than James Doyle. So congratulations to James. Even though he technically fouled the ball. That's my leash hat coming out. Now, listen, I saw Dermot Ling, actually, he's arguing with people on Twitter about whether, now I wouldn't say arguing, that's what I do. He's discussing it. And he's actually admitting it's hard. The first time he tips it back into his hand, I think he did, but it's hard even to see on the replay. So obviously, you know, the referee missed it. But James Doyle, great to see him getting some national recognition. So you're Paddy Power Performer of the Weekend. Congratulations. And that's all we've time for today. We'll be back on Thursday where we'll preview more. We're into provincial final time next weekend, are we?
Yes.
Yeah, we are. We've had the Connacht one anyways. I won't throw that at you again. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to goal, I said I should go on. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, it?
I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I'm gonna see you later, and we're not allowed to talk it out.